Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. Hey everybody, here is an episode from our 10-episode playlist that we're calling Offbeat History.
Yeah, we're adding this to our regular publishing schedule as one kind of big drop all at the same time on March 19th, and that is so that you maybe have a little bit of extra entertainment options available to you, particularly if you are self-quarantined or sheltering in place. Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And today we're doing a podcast on one of those people that come up in history who's kind of larger than life. I'm actually shocked that a lot of people don't know who she is, just because she was really like a tastemaker, as well as being the source of much gossip and discussion in her time.
Yeah, she's not a name that I recognized when you sent the outline over. But as soon as I saw a picture, I went, "Oh,
like,
yeah,
oh, that person." Yeah. She is really unique in that while many people admired her over the years for her life, which was led entirely based on her aesthetics and this idea of creating oneself, when you really start to examine her biography and look at her life story, you also find a woman who was incredibly selfish. And she was even described by close friends as megalomaniacal. So clearly a very flawed person. So I think that's why it is so startling to me that she is so lauded as this amazing icon of style, when the same people who do that are like, oh yes, but she was in many ways terrible. but even when taking into account her really irresponsible and utterly self-centered behavior, it is also easy in some ways to see how she charmed European high society in the early 1900s simply by being such an outlandish creature and really something of a caricature of her own design. And this very complex woman that we're talking about today is Marquesa Luisa Casati.
She was born Luisa Adele Rosa Maria Amon on January 23rd, 1881, in Milan, Italy. Her parents were Alberto Amon and Lucia Bressi. The family was quite wealthy thanks to a successful cotton mill, and Alberto was granted the title of Count by Italy's King Umberto I. As a child, Luisa was interested in art. She taught herself how to draw, first copying images that she had seen in print, and then applying her skill to creating portraits of her family. Luisa was considered a lot less attractive than her older sister, Francesca, and living a rather isolated life as a child of wealth, she was rather shy.
In April of 1894, Count Amman and his wife were traveling in Florence for business, and so they didn't have their daughters with them on the trip. And the countess, who was only 37 at the time, became quite ill suddenly, and she died, although it is still unknown what exactly caused her illness. And in the 2 years following Lucia's death, Alberto tried to raise his daughters, but his business really required more and more of his time. And keep in mind also, he was grieving his wife at this point. He died on July 11th, 1896, 2 years after his wife, leaving his then teenage daughters with an immense fortune.
The girls lived with their paternal uncle, Eduardo Amman, and his wife, Fanny, for a while after their father's death. But naturally, they were restless teenagers. They were eager to engage with the modern world, and their new home was in a small community that was about 25 miles away from Milan.
Yeah, they were very restless. They wanted to go to the city all the time, which is something that they had done with their mother a lot, so there's that to factor in as well. And eventually, in 1900, Luisa made her debut. And soon after, on June 22nd of that same year, she married Camillo Casati Stampa di Soncino, 3 years her senior, and she became a Marchesa in the process. And this match was really a good one, at least on paper. What Casati lacked in liquid wealth, he made up for in noble heritage. And while Luisa had no nobility in her family line, she had a great deal of money. So they kind of complemented each other in that regard. And the newlyweds actually went to the Paris Exposition on their honeymoon.
A year into their marriage, on July 15th, 1901, the Casatis had a daughter, Christina. And at this point, it seemed like Luisa was on track for a fairly conventional life that would be expected for a wealthy married heiress. She had an interest in the occult and the supernatural, which were pretty popular topics at the time, but she was leading a pretty typical, though very lavish life.
Yeah, we really cannot stress how rich she was. She was often touted as the richest woman in Italy, the richest woman in Europe. Some people called her the richest woman in the world during her heyday. But then in 1903, Luisa met the Italian poet and playwright Gabriele D'Annunzio, and her life took on a very different course. For a little background on D'Annunzio, he was famous already at this point for his romantic exploits with actresses and socialites throughout Europe. He is sometimes credited as the inventor of fascism, and an Atlas Obscura article written about him in late 2015 described D'Annunzio as, quote, a cross between the Marquis de Sade, Aaron Burr, Ayn Rand, and Madonna. So that gives you an idea of what he may have been like as a person. D'Annunzio wrote in his novel Il Piacere in 1889, quote, it's necessary that the life of an intellectual be artwork with him as the subject.
D'Annunzio first saw the Marchesa as she rode on horseback one day during a fox hunt. He wasn't participating in this fox hunt. He was just watching. When he saw the woman who he later likened to, quote, a slender Amazon, he was immediately taken with her. And from that moment on, he made sure to attend many of the same hunting parties as the Casatis did, just so he could get close to her. When he did at first start by flirting with her sister, he remained fixated on the Marchesa.
Yeah, there are many theories as to whether he was just lavishing attention on her sister as a way to get Luisa's attention, or if he was just maybe playing the odds, hoping either of these heiresses would be into him. But for Luisa's part, at this point, she was already growing really frustrated with the role of wife. She felt like she was confined by the expectations of it, and she was progressively less and less shy, as it seems she looked to others for social stimulation. And slowly, throughout the course of a series of hunts and events where D'Annunzio made sure he was there, she became aware of him, and he was nearly 20 years older than she was. And his joie de vivre and his adventurous spirit eventually captivated her, though he was far from being an especially handsome man. But it wasn't long before Luisa and D'Annunzio began a sexual relationship.
So the affair that the two of them had was intense. Casati became D'Annunzio's muse, and Casati's husband seemed to just ignore the whole situation. Soon, Luisa, who D'Annunzio had called, quote, destroyer of mediocrity in one of his book dedications, had become the toast of Europe's avant-garde set.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about Camillo Casati and why he seemed to be okay with ignoring this situation in a bit. But we should say that while Luisa and D'Annunzio were sort of gallivanting around Europe, it was not as though everyone immediately accepted the pair. While mistresses were certainly common for wealthy men, for a wealthy married woman to fairly openly pursue a romance with a man who was not her husband was still considered quite scandalous, and Luisa often found herself the subject of gossip, both whispered and in print, although it did not seem to bother her. She actually seemed to kind of like it.
She also started to gather a list of very high-profile friends and admirers. As her list of high-profile friends and admirers got longer and longer, Marchesa Luisa Casati continued to evolve. She constantly upped the bar on her own outlandishness to basically keep people interested in her and feed all the stories in the gossip columns. So not only was she not bothered by the gossip, she was encouraging it.
Yeah, that goes on throughout her life. And she was such an unusual character that she became almost mythical. Her extreme appearance, which we'll talk about in a bit, fostered all manner of gossip and speculation that was both tied to and reaching beyond any that had circulated about her affair with D'Annunzio. And she seems, as Tracy just said, to have consciously nurtured the more outlandish stories that were told about her in social circles and society pages.
Living in the vast, luxurious homes that she shared with her husband, because they did have several homes, often left the Marchesa feeling lonely, isolated, and bored. She countered this problem by throwing really lavish balls and parties, often for charity. She was often outfitted in the most extreme and showy ensembles for these themed events.
And we're going to talk more about how Casati started to morph into an almost entirely different person after she met D'Annunzio in just a moment. But first, we're going to pause for a word from one of our sponsors.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/Papertarian. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. The years following 1903, when she first met D'Annunzio, the Marchesa changed dramatically. D'Annunzio's idea of self-creation as art, which we mentioned a moment ago, really struck a chord with Luisa. And Cassati was, naturally, a very striking figure. You'll remember that he saw her riding on horseback and was completely taken with her. She was 6 feet tall, and she was very, very thin. But she actually chose to accentuate these physical traits rather than minimizing them, and she created a sort of character in the way that she chose to present herself. So her hair, which was naturally sort of a dark brown color, slowly shifted in shades to become a brighter and brighter shade of red. She's powdered her skin so it would be as pale as possible, and she took on the habit of maintaining a constant smoky eye appearance by applying plenty and plenty of coal eyeliner.
She was really dedicated to maintaining a very heavy, dark-eyed look. Sometimes she would go so far as to glue strips of black velvet around her eyes, in addition to always wearing these very heavy fake lashes. Sometimes she would have several layers of lashes on at a time. I have hard enough time with one.
I know.
On the rare occasion that I have reason to wear eyelashes. She's even said to have taken belladonna in regular doses to try to keep her pupils dilated for the aesthetic effect, which also sounds very difficult. All of this artifice was because she wanted, in her own words, to become, quote, a living work of art. And this sentiment was very clearly in line with D'Annunzio's ideology as an artist.
Like you, I can't imagine that much heaviness around my eyes. At times, she allegedly wore false eyelashes that were like 2 inches long.
Man.
And then layered. It would feel like a chandelier, but it did make her quite striking and memorable.
Well, I remember at my wedding, my lashes were really two different lashes, but one of them was a half set.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, that was a lot of eyelash.
Too much. I wonder about the strength of her eyelids. Like, they were constantly getting a workout. All of these changes in her appearance, because up to this point, she really had kind of looked like the classic, well-dressed, almost Gibson girl-esque image. But these changes did not go unnoticed by Cassati's friends and acquaintances. And so as she stepped farther and farther out of her demure appearance as a wife of nobility, people actually began to speculate that there may be some occult influence that was being exerted by D'Annunzio that was causing this shift in her appearance and behavior because it was so dramatic.
When I went to find artwork to go with this episode, my first thought after, oh yeah, was, is it Halloween already?
It's always Halloween, Tracy.
I know. So for his part, D'Annunzio was equally under her spell. So he had seduced a lot of women in his time, and he would eventually move on when either his interest in them or their money ran out. But Luisa really kept his attention, in part because she just stayed really obsessed with herself and her transformation. She's more obsessed with that than she was with him. And that and their shared love of aesthetics and decadence really fueled their romance. Neither of them was tethered to the other, but they stayed involved romantically for decades.
Yeah, I was reading in one account that part of the reason was that she always met him as an equal. Like, she never fell into the traditional role of a woman as subservient when she was with him. And so he sort of was very intoxicated by that. In 1906, Camillo Casati, her husband, commissioned another home, this one in Rome, and Luisa was given complete control over its decor. And the move, at least for part of her time to Rome, remember she lived in many houses, facilitated Luisa meeting some new friends who were as obsessed with art as she was, including the painter and sculptor Alberto Martini and the futurist Filippo Tommaso Marinetti.
Through D'Annunzio, she also met with the celebrated portrait painter Giovanni Boldini. This artist was instantly fascinated with Luisa, and he wanted to paint her in his studio in Paris. So, without hesitation, she moved immediately and temporarily to France. She left her husband, her child, and many, many households behind. When Boldini's painting, which features the Marchesa clad almost entirely in black with accents of purple, accompanied by a greyhound and sort of gazing directly out from the canvas, when this was unveiled as part of a show of portraits by Boldini, it got a lot of attention.
And it was both praised as the apex of Boldini's work and criticized as having a vaguely demonic air about it. And that controversial assortment of attention to the work completely delighted Luisa Casati. But her delight quickly turned to anger when she discovered that Boldini had denied magazines the right to print reproductions of the portrait. She really wanted that press. And after the artist and his subject bickered over the matter, primarily through a series of letters back and forth, Boldini finally consented, although he was convinced it would lead to a degradation of his reputation because of the bad prints that would be produced.
Meanwhile, D'Annunzio was obsessed with Venice, and that sparked Casati's own love affair with that city. So the Marchesa decided she needed a home there, too. She had actually set the wheels in motion before this portrait trip to Paris, but it wasn't until after the painting had been shown that a lease was found that would suit her needs.
In 1910, Marchesa Luisa Casati moved into the Palazzo Venier de Leoni, and construction on this unfinished Venice palace was likely begun in the mid-1700s. The luxurious home, which sits right on the canal, was never completed by its architect, Lorenzo Boschetti, but even unfinished, it was the perfect place for Marchesa Casati to indulge her every flamboyant whim.
So first she had the structure restored and decorated, but she insisted that this restoration still retain the sense of deterioration that the building had had. She just wanted it to be structurally sound so that it would not literally deteriorate around her. She also hired a permanent gondolier who was always dressed in 18th century clothing, complete with a powdered wig.
Yeah, there are stories about how the people who owned the other homes in the area were really excited initially that it was being renovated because it had gotten a little dilapidated and was something of an eyesore. And then they realized there was nothing being done on the outside. They're like, oh, it's still going to look like a mess. But she loved it that way. And in setting up her new home, Luisa had her greyhounds transported to Venice. And then she purchased two cheetahs as pets as well. She would eventually start taking the cheetahs out in her gondola and walking them through Venice on jeweled leashes.
To complete her image in her new city, Marchesa Casati turned to the designer Mariano Fortuny. This long, lean lines and rich colors and luxurious fabrics that Fortuny is famous for made the already tall and thin Marchesa look even more extreme, so she became a really devoted customer.
By this point, Luisa and Camillo, who preferred Rome, were living almost entirely separate lives. Their daughter Christina, who was 9 when Luisa moved into her Venetian palace, was sent to boarding school. In effect, Louisa had completely rid herself of any of her familial obligations. And Camillo Casati was dependent enough on his estranged wife's wealth that he really didn't make a fuss about her essentially abandoning him and her daughter. The pair did eventually legally separate, but that was several years into Louisa's carefully cultivated life on the canal in 1914, and it was another decade before they would actually be divorced. Louisa, incidentally, insisted that she get to keep the title of Marquesa in that divorce settlement.
The Marquesa, who the residents of Venice started to call La Casati, became famous for the parties that she both threw and attended. She became the ultimate party girl. She spent massive sums of money on drinks as well as opium. And at one soiree, a Russian ballet dancer named Vaslav Nijinsky and an American dancer, being Isadora Duncan, gave an impromptu performance for the other lucky attendees who were there.
That sounds amazing. She also had a wax version of herself made, and at times she would do things like sit in a dimly lit room with it during her parties to see how guests would behave when they wandered in and discovered this odd duo. And this waxen doppelganger would sometimes accompany her to dress fittings, or it would be seated at the dining table as though it was a guest. And at one point, D'Annunzio even planned to include the wax figure in a narrative that he was writing, although it appears that that project, which was a short story, never really came to fruition, or if it did, it was lost to time.
A key part of her image, particularly at all these parties, was La Casati's wardrobe. There are descriptions on top of descriptions about her dresses and her jewels and her accessories. She's said to have adopted the habit of shopping in Venice with her cheetahs, wearing nothing but an incredibly luxurious dressing gown. She's even been described at times as wearing more perfume than clothing. This was also the period of her life where she regularly patronized another one of our past podcast subjects, designer Paul Poiret.
Yeah, she definitely liked to draw the eye, which was sometimes in a wild outfit. There's an image, if you do an internet search for her, you'll find an image of her in this wonderfully bizarre-looking dress that's made of light bulbs. But then she would also just kind of count on using a bit of nudity to try to get the same attention if the clothes weren't doing the trick. There's one story of her at a party where she insisted she couldn't breathe and she just cut her dress off of herself. So she definitely was into the exhibitionism. She would also have outfits made by Ballet Russe costume designer Leon Bakst as well. And increasingly, the difference between her fancy dress ensembles and her everyday clothes became kind of indiscernible. And at the same time, she felt her wardrobe had to be constantly augmented to top what had come before. So she was always adding to that. And the amusement park that her palace had become. She just kept wanting more and more and more of everything.
In addition to the dogs and the cheetahs, there were monkeys, birds, and other wild cats. She then became obsessed with snakes. She started with small snakes and eventually worked her way up to a boa constrictor. She also wanted the snakes to travel with her, and she commissioned expensive boxes from jewelers so that she could carry them with her when she ventured away from Venice. She's also alleged to have convinced a zoo in Rome to lend her a lion so that she could have it tethered to the throne that she kept in her home.
So while Casati was, by all accounts, a lover of animals, comes up over and over that she loved them, the manners, we have to say, in which she kept them were obviously not kind by today's standards. Keeping primates confined in cages, taking wildcats out on leashes, making leopards pull her in a chariot, and sedating snakes so that she could wear them as jewelry are obviously all very, very problematic. In short, keeping exotic animals as pets is generally a bad idea, and especially so when they are considered fashion accessories.
But for all that extreme extravagance, Louisa always wanted more. So we're going to dive into some of the ways that she pursued it after we pause for another quick sponsor break. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. When even her home wasn't an exciting enough space for her decadent masked balls and costume parties, Cassati actually managed to get permission to use Venice's Piazza San Marco as her own private party space. She hosted a grand ball there in September 1913, which was an 18th century themed masquerade ball. And the Marchesa made a grand entrance by boat after the rest of the guests had arrived, heralded by trumpet and accompanied by her cheetahs.
Cassati also became increasingly interested in the occult while living in Venice, and she would seek out seances and other gatherings of like-minded people all through Europe. She would also invite people who seemed to have connections to the spirit world to live in her home as Venice, in Venice as guests for long periods of time.
Yeah, she had people that lived there for years. And perhaps in line with her complete indulgence in her own fantasy world, As the unrest of World War I began, Louisa was almost indifferent to it. She was actually in Paris on August 3rd, 1914, when Germany declared war on France. And the next day, in her suite at the Ritz, she rang her bell for breakfast service, which was incidentally in the afternoon for her, and she was irritated when no one came to bring her food. She allegedly ran down into the hotel lobby and discovered a bunch of soldiers there. And that same day, Great Britain declared war on Germany. Cassati really weathered the war in relative ease. She took advantage of that time to patronize new artists and basically continue her lavish lifestyle.
In 1919, Cassati's sister Francesca died during the Spanish flu epidemic. Francesca had been the one family member that Louisa had retained a relationship with, although there's no real account of how the loss affected the Marquesa.
That's something that comes up over and over. There's not much recorded about her, like, emotional state at some of these times. So whether that's just because she kept it private, because it did not add to the exterior mystique that she was working to cultivate or not is unclear. She continued to travel the world, amazing, amusing, and sometimes dismaying her hosts in various measures with her outlandish attire, which sometimes included a walking stick that was almost as tall as she was, which was actually a flask from which she would serve herself absinthe. During a lengthy stay on the island of Capri, she wore only black, and she dyed her hair bright green, but then eventually darkened it black as well. And her sort of bizarre behavior and appearance led to rumors spreading among the locals there in Capri that she actually slept in a coffin.
Though she remained her same self, the post-war world was less and less her oyster. A lot of her rich friends that she'd been partying with for years were struggling financially after World War I. They couldn't keep up with her anymore. And then to make matters worse, ready-to-wear clothing was becoming stylish, which is something we've talked about in past episodes. Ready-to-wear clothes were utter anathema to her. The custom closet of expensive garments that she was used to having became difficult to maintain when many designers making those garments were closing up shop. Her trademark white skin and red lip, which she maintained, started to look dated instead of glamorous.
And at the same time, Louisa was tiring of her homes in Italy, and so she purchased the Grand Trianon in Versailles, which was known as the Palais Rose because of its pink marble exterior. And just as she had done in Venice, Cassati spared no expense in creating another spectacle of decor and indulgence.
It was in the Palais Rose at the end of June 1927, which was deep in the decade known as Année Folle, or Crazy Years, in France. Cassati threw a massive party called Soirée Magique. The Marquesa was costumed as the Count Cagliostro, who had been an Italian magician and occultist in the late 1700s. Cassati's ensemble for the event included a crystal sword and a suit made of silver and gold.
A photographer from Vogue magazine was actually on hand to capture the event, but this lavish, primarily outdoor party was upstaged by the weather. When a storm rolled in as the costumed guests were conducting a parade, everyone had to make a run for it. And as that storm whipped in, Cassati, who literally her clothes were being whipped off of her by this weather, brandished her sword to try to rally the revelers. But then she fainted, and the evening came to a rapid and unpleasant close. There were a lot of other things that happened that night that did not go well. Allegedly, one attendee even spent the night locked in a closet for having committed the sin of wearing an outfit similar to the hostess.
All of this lavish living, the costumes, the animals, the drinks, and the houses, obviously they were expensive. Louisa soon blazed through the fortune she had inherited as a teenager. By 1930, she had also taken on massive debt, alleged to be as high as $25 million in modern worth.
Desperate to try to settle some of those debts, Cassati traded many of her priceless pieces of art away, and she sold items from her home. She also started to borrow money from shady people to try to make up gaps in her finances, which only created worse problems. Additionally, she still couldn't manage to control her spending habits after a lifetime of just throwing money around without a care.
An auction was held at the Palais Rose in December 1932, and almost all of the Marquesa's personal possessions were up for grabs. The Palais Rose itself was mortgaged several months later and passed to one of Cassati's creditors.
Louisa initially moved into an apartment in Paris, but after just 6 months there, she had no permanent address in the city. She basically moved from hotel to hotel. She depended on the generosity of friends to cover her expenses. In 1938, the person who Louisa had been closest to for the longest length of time in her life, Gabrielle D'Annunzio, died. Just as with her sister, there is no record of her reaction to this passing, and she did not attend his funeral.
Meanwhile, Camillo Casati had remarried and settled into a quiet life. Christina Casati had married Francis Hastings, the 16th Earl of Huntingdon, and Marchesa Casati would sometimes visit them in their home in Britain. In 1934, Hastings painted a portrait of Louisa.
Yeah, so she had a relationship with her daughter, but it seems like it was, to my reading, it feels almost like here is my odd distant relative than like the closeness that a mother and daughter would normally share. And eventually, to escape her debts in France and Italy and a reputation that had been built on a lifetime of invited gossip that then, at this point, made her basically a pariah in high society, Casati moved permanently to Great Britain, although it's unclear exactly when this move happened.
By 1942, she was destitute. And by the late 1950s, Casati was living in London in a series of small flats. She never stayed in one for very long. Over the intervening years, she had subsisted on small, regular donations of money from her friends. They wanted to keep her from having to beg, but they knew that if they gave her lump sums, she would just spend it all and then be back to asking for help.
The once exquisitely outfitted Marchesa was sometimes seen rummaging in trash bins for bits of velvet or lace to adorn herself. And there are numerous accounts, even from the people who loved her dearly, of her ongoing substance abuse. She could be, at turns, her most charming and delightful self, or an angry and unpredictable specter of her former glory. Her daughter Christina, who had divorced and remarried at this point, helped her mother as she could, but then Christina died of breast cancer in 1953.
In her later years, Marchesa Louisa Casati was largely cut off from most of the society that had once celebrated her. She no longer corresponded. She had started believing she was telepathic. She engaged in seances with the handful of friends and acquaintances who were making up her social circle by the end of her life.
She died of a stroke on June 1st, 1957, at the age of 76. A friend and frequent seance participant named Sydney Farmer snuck into her home after learning that she had died and took her Pekingese dog, which was taxidermied, and a pair of false eyelashes, which he then spruced up. This was not to steal them, but to make sure that someone who knew and cared about her preserved them for her funeral.
Marchesa Casati was buried 5 days after she died with the taxidermied dog and the false eyelashes, dressed in black and leopard, at Brompton Cemetery, one of the oldest garden cemeteries in London.
Among those in attendance, which was a very small number, was Emilio Basaldella, who was Casati's gondolier from Venice.
Louisa's Venice home was purchased in 1949 by Peggy Guggenheim. It was Guggenheim's home for 30 years, and beginning in 1951, the American socialite would open her Venice home, which was filled with art, to the public. In 1980, 1 year after Guggenheim died, it was opened to the public for good as the Guggenheim Museum, which it remains today. So, if you wish to walk in Marchesa Louisa Casati's decadent footsteps, you can still visit her former residence in Venice.
Yeah, as I was talking about her to a number of people, particularly over the weekend, I saw a lot of friends, and several of them have traveled throughout Italy, and I was saying, oh, you know, have you been to the Guggenheim in Venice? And they would go, yes, it's amazing. And I'm like, that is where she lived. And they would go, holy Moses, because it's an impressive structure. If you have ever heard of the fashion brand Marchesa, it is named after her. Many, many designers have used Louisa Casati as inspiration for their collections, and there has been speculation that her unique look, tall and gaunt, was a big part of what drove the fashion industry to seek out models exclusively of that body type for many years.
Writer Quentin Crisp described Casati in the foreword to her biography as, quote, a picturesque ruin of a woman. But he also made a really insightful observation that goes a long way in examining how a woman who in her youth seemed set to live a secure, conventional life ended up taking such a dramatically different path. Chris wrote, quote, "Without question, the Marchesa Cassati was an exhibitionist, but exhibitionism is a potent drug. After a short time, a dose strong enough to kill a novice no longer works."
And in a similar sentiment, painter and illustrator Alberto Martini, who, of course, we mentioned in the episode she knew, he was one of the many artists that she became friends with, and he actually worked as Cassati's personal painter for a time, wrote in his autobiography that the Marchesa, quote, "lived partly as a slave to her dream world."
And finally, Jean Cocteau once wrote of Marchesa Luisa Cassati, "she astonished, she did not please."
So that's the Marchesa Luisa Cassati, who is a mind bender for me. She's very fascinating. It's one of those things where you kind of want to love her, but then you're like, oof, it's difficult. I think probably many people in her life felt the same way.
Thank you so much for joining us today for this classic. If you have heard any kind of email address or maybe a Facebook URL during the course of the episode, that might be obsolete. It might be doubly obsolete because we have changed our email address again. You can now reach us at historypodcasts@iheartradio.com, and we're all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. That's right.